What's the use of talking about it to those who are plodding along in the valleys? No, mystical experience is not reserved for the saints. It plays a part at least in the form of transitory graces, in the onset of many conversions, as well as in the lives of beginners on the path to holiness. I agree, of course, that the summits of mystical experience are reached only by those who are very advanced in the spiritual life. Such persons live with God, by God, and in God. Saint John of the Cross has described the innermost life of the great mystics in his ascent of Mount Carmel. In thus allowing God to work in it, the soul is at once illumined and transformed in God, and God communicates to it his supernatural being, in such wise that it appears to be God himself, and has all that God himself has. All the things of God in the soul are one in participant transformation, and the soul seems to be God rather than a soul, and is indeed God by participation, although it is true that its natural being, though thus transformed, is as distinct from the being of God as it was before, even as the window has likewise a nature distinct from that of the ray, though the ray gives it brightness. 5. The beginner is indeed far from such an experience. However, the Lord sometimes allows him to glimpse these summits, to spur him on to desire and pursue union with God, the goal of every Christian life. Saint Teresa of Avila and Saint Jane de Chantal relate that their young nuns very often attained to a mystical mental prayer after 6 months or a year in the novitiate. Mystical experience, as the definition I gave you earlier implied, is not limited to times of formal mental prayer. In the midst of action, the mystic experiences the fact that he is led by God. He is led to act, or led to pray while he is acting. However, it is during formal mental prayer that the soul discovers more readily that its God is within, present and acting. The reason for this is simply that, at that particular time, the soul makes a conscious effort to be completely free, available, and surrendered to God. Again, I shall borrow the description of this experience from St. John of the Cross. He first calls to mind that, in its early phase, mental prayer consists in meditating. He then shows that prayerful souls, especially if they have given up everything to surrender themselves to God in the religious life, soon receive the grace of infused contemplation. This is the way he describes this new form of mystical mental prayer. For God secretly and quietly infuses into the soul loving knowledge and wisdom without any intervention of specific acts, although sometimes he specifically produces them in the soul for some length of time. And the soul has then to walk with loving advertence to God, without making specific acts, but conducting itself, as we have said, passively, and making no efforts of its own, but preserving this simple, pure and loving advertence, like one that opens his eyes with the advertence of love. Since God, then, as giver, is communing with the soul by means of loving and simple knowledge, the soul must likewise commune with him by receiving with a loving and simple knowledge or advertence, so that knowledge may be united with knowledge and love with love. For it is meet that he who receives should behave in conformity with that which he receives, and not otherwise, in order to be able to receive and retain it as it is given to him. Let no one imagine that this is some sort of luxurious pastime. During mental prayer such as this, God works great things within the soul, and consequently great things in the church. Living Flame of Love, stanza 3. Paragraphs 31 and 32, in Volume 3 of the Complete Works. And the smallest part of this that God brings to pass in the soul in holy rest and solitude is an inestimable blessing, greater sometimes than either the soul itself, or he that guides it, can imagine. To dissuade the soul from this form of prayer, from this supernatural recollection, to bring it out of the gulf of deep water, as some spiritual directors sometimes do, is, Saint John of the Cross vigorously declares, a sin whose consequences are incalculable. It is a thing of no small weight, and no slight crime, to cause the soul to lose inestimable blessings by counseling it to go out of its way and to leave it prostrate. For the business of God has to be undertaken with great circumspection, and with eyes wide open, most of all in matters so delicate and sublime as the conduct of these souls, where a man may bring them almost infinite gain if the advice that he gives be good and almost infinite loss if it be mistaken. Does this mean that such a life of mental prayer is one of complete repose, without trials, dangers, or illusions? Of course not. That's why Saint John of the Cross, Saint Teresa, and so many others set out, in their writings, to guide the souls that God is leading along this path. Need we fear lest this life of mental prayer draw lay persons away from the apostolate? The example of Saint Teresa of Avila suffices to refute this objection. The more a soul commits itself to the path of mental prayer, the stronger and more intense within it becomes the need to know and make known, to love and make others love, and to serve and inspire others to serve the Lord. To quote Bergson, Living Flame of Love, Second Redaction, Stanza 3, Paragraph 39, in Volume 3 of the Complete Works. Living Flame of Love, Stanza 3, Paragraph 48, in Volume 3 of the Complete Works. It's an irresistible impulsion that plunges it into vast undertakings. A calm exaltation of all its faculties gives it far-ranging vision, and weak as it may be, makes it accomplish great things. Above all, it sees things simply, and this simplicity, which is evident both in its words and in its behavior, guides it through complications that it doesn't even seem to notice. An innate knowledge, or rather an acquired innocence, thus suggests from the start the useful course, the decisive action, the unanswerable word. With all, effort remains indispensable, as well as endurance and perseverance. But these come of their own accord. They unfold spontaneously in the soul that is both acting and acted upon, whose liberty coincides with the activity of God. Forgive me, dear Father, for writing to you at such length. But this subject is particularly important to me. I observe that the Christian life of those who surrender to the guidance of the Spirit of God is so much more vital. They manifest great joy of soul, even amid trials. They persevere in their ascent toward God, even if they sometimes grow faint on the way, and their actions reveal exceptional power and efficacy. May you see this letter, dear Father, as the sign of my very great esteem for your priestly dedication, and of my hope that you may lead the many souls that place their trust in you, to the closest possible union with God. Please believe in my fraternal friendship. 91. To be or to act. During our last visit, I told you that Christian prayer is not merely a human activity. Rather, it springs from the depths of our Christian being, that shares in the divine nature cf. 2 Pi:4. And as you probably remember, I added, don't pray with your human intellect or emotions. Pray with your innermost being. As it happens, this prayer of one's being is evoked in a letter I have just received. I am copying a passage from it for you. As you will see, it is not written in a Christian climate. A certain pantheistic mentality seems to pervade it. That doesn't prevent the advice that my correspondent received from being understood in a sense acceptable to a Christian. And now here's the letter. During a business trip around the world, I had the opportunity to spend a few days in India. My mind was still full of the things I had read many years before about this prestigious land. And so I asked my French friends who were offering me hospitality, and who had lived in India many years, whether there were still any of those holy men, permeated with wisdom and prayer, whose influence had been so great in India over the centuries. Actually, this was not the world in which my friends lived. Anyway, being anxious to please me, they made inquiries. And one day they brought me into a small, remote village, and left me at the house of a holy man. They had been told that he had great renown throughout the region. The man, who received me in a kind of a hut, was about 70 years old. Poor, thin, and wearing only a loincloth, he gave the appearance of great moral strength and purity of soul. I told him in my halting English that I was a Catholic, but didn't want to leave India without being counseled by a wise man, rich in the religious traditions of the country. What a surprise for me to learn that he was British. For many years he had practiced medicine in this distant land. For the past 15 years, he has spent his life in prayer, and in teaching the ways of prayer to those who come to him. His spirituality seemed rather offbeat, but deeply religious. He looked at me for a long time. I wondered if he had understood me. I was almost embarrassed by his gaze, clear, insistent, and penetrating, but also very kindly. At last, he began to question me. "Do you pray every day?" "Yes," I answered, "but only for a short while." "And how do you pray?" I described my method of mental prayer, adoration, reflection on a page of scripture, then praise, and finally petitions for myself and for others. He smiled as he listened to me. It was a smile full of sympathy, but, seemingly, not free from a certain condescension. He went on to say, "Westerners always think that to pray is to do something. Here, all the sages have taught us that to pray is to be. If there is being, of what use is the added doing? If there is no being, then the doing is devoid of value." Seeing that I didn't understand his thought at first, he explained. "To pray is to be. I am not speaking of activities or attitudes of the mind. Being is the substance of man. This is what we must bring to God. We must be there, attentive to God, with Him, for Him, and in His presence, stripped of all having and all doing. Being is the only true action, the action that is intense, surging, irrepressible, efficacious, and powerful. It isn't easy to be. Our being is covered over with the sediments of non-being. We must begin by freeing ourselves from them. Our being must be revitalized. Then it must be exposed naked to the rays of divinity. Then perhaps, someday, it will be drawn in by the great being, like the drop of dew that evaporates in the sunshine and goes to join the clouds. On that day, to be will consist in being in the one who is, being in God, being God." Turning to me, the holy man asked, "Do you want to pray for a moment with me?" And seated on the bare earth in the Buddha position, my host recollected himself, or rather was seized by recollection. All at once, I felt he was miles away from me. I couldn't pray. I couldn't take my eyes off his face, which was becoming more beautiful with each passing minute, as though transparent to a light within him. Time slipped by unnoticed. At nightfall, I withdrew without making the slightest noise. But he opened his eyes and looked at me with great love. "From now on, when you pray to your God, we shall be side by side just as we were today, more perfectly than today." 92. Said. "My dear Jacques, you are right in thinking that to become a man of prayer, one must discipline his instincts, put order in his priorities, and attain interior unity. Does this mean that before beginning the practice of mental prayer, one must have attained perfect self-mastery? I am less convinced of this than you. But before presenting my point of view, I'd like you to read the letter a friend sent me 20 years ago, and that I recently found. I am copying it down for you. Here I am again, after many long years of absence in this North African city I love so much. There is the joy of seeing relatives again, of renewing friendships, of encountering smiling faces. I wake up in the morning to see palm trees swaying in the wind, and ancient stones gilded by the sunday. During the day I shake 1,000 hands. In the confusion of my arrival, I had a surprise,